Once more, welcome to this second session of session for public hearing. And the technology here, the song is called it now, here.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. My name is Steve Malevo. I'm from the Innovation Hub. My name is Steve Malevo. I'm from the Innovation Hub. I'm going to be our presentation by the first presentation. We decided to do everything for two. I will give an overview of the Innovation Hub and my colleague, Dr. Jules Sawyer, who specifically speak to aspects of the bill and comments. I think by way of starting, let me first, on behalf of the Innovation Hub, express our sincere gratitude to the Department of Science and Technology, the Ministry of Science and Technology, for having started this bill. We think it's a very good initiative. And having said that, our presentation would actually be based on our own experiences of having run the Innovation Hub over the past 3 years as a science park. And as the bulk of our comments actually drawn from the comments of the small, medium-sized, high-technology companies that are based at the Innovation Hub. So, by way of starting, let me try and give the honorable members a sense of what the Innovation Hub is all about. If you look at the slide, you'll see some of the key elements that make a hub, a technology-based hub. Business clusters. First of all, the Innovation Hub was or is actually a project created by the Housing Provincial Government. Its main purpose is to develop high technology based companies within the region of housing. Now, some of the activities were involved in business clusters, but some of the key clusters we have in the Innovation Hub are, for instance, the biotech clusters, the ICT clusters. We also have plans to create an energy cluster. We also have plans to bring on board the water research and environment cluster. Okay. The key component of an Innovation Hub is this integration. Jill from the Innovation Hub is in charge of that program. But the essence of a business integration program is to grow technology-based companies. It's to take entrepreneurs who come into the Innovation Hub with a technology-based concept, and we put them in an environment where they are able to transform those technology-based companies, our technology-based concepts, into viable companies. Also important to our work is the networking aspect. We have a virtual cluster of high-tech companies in and around housing. And these are predominantly high-tech companies who come into the Innovation Hub from time to time to come and network. And in the process of networking, they generate business. And we believe, because innovation actually happens at network, in the process of mixing of among these companies, one is able to engender innovation among them. There's also an aspect of an enabling environment, and that's in terms of incentives. I must say that there are very few incentives from the government side to the Innovation Hub. We're in the process of talking to the trading industry and other government departments, including the municipality, the city of Swanee, to look at specific incentives which we can use to attract some of your high-tech investments in the area. Okay. But very key and important is the education and industry interface. Now, the Innovation Hub is located next to the CSIR, the Department of Science and Technology, and the University of Victoria. And we're about 10 kilometers away from Swan University of Technology. But we are located within most of your science and research councils in Swan, right? It's an important, that location is important from the point of view of the transfer of technology between these institutions and ourselves. We've got a number of projects, for instance, the CoachLab project, which is essentially a leadership project where we take computer science graduates from some of these universities who come and do leadership programs within the Innovation Hub. Now, I'm sharing some of these experiences with you because we believe very strongly that in creating innovation, it's important to create an environment where one can have people meet and discuss concepts so that I think they begin to share knowledge among themselves. Okay. We have created such an environment within Swanee. Now, what I have there is just basically an international association of science park definition on what an innovation hub or what a science park is. In bold letters, I mean, you've got the science park has as its aim to increase the wealth of the community. Okay. Now, that's done largely by the stimulation and management of flow of knowledge and technology amongst universities, researchers, and that's why this institution has to be in proximity to some of your research institutions. We use incubation and spin-off processes and value-added services to achieve this objective. Now, in as much as I think our aim is technology innovation, but you see that central to this definition is the issue of soft aspects. I mean, the Innovation Hub is nothing else but a special space where one promotes science and technology and commercialization. Now, some of the key important drivers of a hub of this nature is technology-based companies, as I've mentioned. The other important aspect is the creation of a triple helix model where business, research, academia, and government work. Over and above what we do within our cluster, we have other programs which are meant to support companies outside of the innovation. We've got programs together with the city of Swanee, where we're trying to promote what we call a smart city, where the city will use the knowledge base within the region of Swanee for its economic support. What I've also included there is basically a short definition of what we mean by innovation, but the essence of this definition really is that innovation is really about processes that we put into place to create products and services which in fact lead to economically and socially beneficial products and services. It really is about wealth creation. I think just in conclusion, before my colleague Jill comes on, I wanted to share with you some of what we regard as a very good case something. Of what we regard as a very good example of an innovation environment. And I've taken a slide from Tekes, from Finland. If you look at your presentation, I think on page 6. There are a number of institutions which I think constitute the national system of innovation for the Finnish society. But I think central to some of those institutions is Tekes. And Tekes is an equivalent of TIA. Now, I'll put this slide in here so I think from our own side, we can share some of the experiences of Tekes. Now, I think key to Tekes is that Technically, it is basically a backbone of the Finnish National System of Innovation. It provides funding largely for commercialization. Right? It funds some of the research councils, it funds big companies, it funds small companies, it funds any activity that's related to commercialization. Now, interestingly, Tegra does not take an interest in any of those companies. I mean, now we noticed that in the bill we're talking about taking interest. Tegra doesn't. Tegra offers soft loans. It offers all forms of support for some of those companies. And also very interesting, even if an entrepreneur fails, some of those entrepreneurs can go back to Tegra and apply for a loan. Right? So, in essence, the nature of Tegra's effect or impact in the Finnish society is the number of businesses are created within the Finnish society. So our argument really is we're going to be able to take risks. I mean, there are other funding models, funding agencies similar to what we're trying to create here, who are prepared to take risks. And I'm sharing with you this specific example because I think in my view it gives a very clear example of perhaps what we should be looking at. I think having said that, thank you very much. I'll now hand over to my colleague Joe to take you into the specific aspect of the bill. Thank you.
Thanks, JT. Chair, honourable members, I think what my colleague has sketched is certainly an environment which we believe is very enabling for innovation to happen, and you'll have heard a lot about collaboration and networking. And we're coming from that context because we've seen that this has proved to be very beneficial. So if we start getting to the specifics in terms of some of the concerns we have relating to the draft bill, firstly, we look at the object as it's described. And in this case, we are focusing on the process that has been described for stimulating and intensifying technological innovation and invention. As it's described in the bill, it talks about by developing and exploiting innovations and inventions. Now, this wording implies direct involvement rather than facilitation. And the concern we have is that TIA may be perceived to be competing with the private sector. And if this is a perception, this is not going to foster collaboration. And again, you know, we're going to keep stressing the collaboration because we really do believe that it's critical if innovation is to take place. If we were to say, in terms of how could this perhaps be worded slightly differently, or trying to look at the anticipated return of investment that the TIA would be getting, rather than perhaps getting a return on direct investment in the companies that it spins out, or the intellectual property that it invests in. We were suggesting that perhaps what is really needed is to have an effective innovation value chain. In other words, that all the current gaps in the whole funding cycle of innovation are covered. Hence, we are very supportive of the idea of a technology innovation agency, but it needs to almost be a cradle to grave funding of the innovation value chain. And again, the result of this would be that our country and our companies become more competitive by enhancing the commercial and socioeconomic benefits. So if one assumes that this is the anticipated return on investment, then perhaps the appropriate methodology that could result in collaboration would be to establish a facilitating agency, being the TIA, which promotes collaboration between business, research, or academia, and government interests. So we're suggesting perhaps a SLUS, which in terms of rather than being directly involved in management structures of companies, and again being perceived as perhaps being playing too much in the space of the private sector, rather that this should be seen as an enabler and creating a collaborative environment for innovation. if we come specifically to the some of the issues around powers and duties, and here again I've just taken paraphrases from the draft bill, paragraph 41A2, the wording is establishing operational companies to develop or exploit any technological innovation or invention, and the paragraph 41C talks about acquiring any right in or to any technological innovation, invention, or patent. Here we see again an implication that government could get involved in the management structures of these companies. And again, we're cautioning that here you would have two cultures in a company, particularly a small company. You would have a government culture which is by its nature, it is large, it is risk averse, it is bureaucratic, it has to manage down risk, versus a small company, entrepreneurial, very fast, very high risk, and you can think of the tension that would be created on any board of such a company where you have these divergent cultures. A second issue that this could that could result from the implementation of these paragraphs would be government would be seen to compete with entrepreneurs but would have the unfair advantage of using government money. In other words, if government money getting used to take equity in companies, and again, this would be perceived to be an unfair advantage by the private sector. Paragraph 4.2 talks about when the agency enters into any transaction with any enterprise or company, the agency must ensure that the department is represented in the, and we paragraph for the company board. Here are two main issues that we caution. The first is that no discretion is actually left to the TIA board in terms of whether it should or shouldn't have representation on the board of a specific company. So, in other words, even if it were a really small investment, as the bill is currently structured, there would have to be representation. And for a, if we think, for instance, of a company, say, SATI, with a turnover of about $6 billion, if the TIA were to make, let's say, a $3 million investment, in some innovation they were developing, the question would be, would it make sense to have somebody actually sitting on the SATI board representing that relatively small interest in terms of the bigger picture? The second issue would be the TIA would have to be represented on the board of every investment, and again, the question is, how big would TIA have to be to have sufficient people to be represented on all these respective boards? Another question is, how diverse would the skill set have to be of TIA to be sitting on all these respective boards of all these respective companies and organizations? And then thirdly, the question would be why government should actually play such a direct role in business ventures. From the company perspective, the question might be raised, well, what value will it add, and also how empowered would that representative be? Because if it's a case of one would have to make rapid decisions, and the government representative would have to go through a couple of committees, etc., before a decision is forthcoming, this would severely impede the activity of an agile company. And then a couple of comments regarding the board. Again, as it is structured at the moment, the caution is, if the board, it's fine if the board is there to control process, but if the board is there to make technical decisions, there could be vested interest in some cases. If one thinks in our country we have a small expert and highly technical skills pool, it could be that you have the same people running their own businesses and sitting on the board. And let's take, for example, a large company looking at a proposal from a small company that's coming up with some invention or innovation that would radically change the way of business. There could be a conflict of interest in that the board member might feel they would want to make a recommendation otherwise, that this would be a technology that shouldn't in fact fly. So again, cautioning against possible conflict of interest, and particularly if the board members are part-time members, which generally they are. The bill also addresses quite in detail the selection and operating principles of the board, but not adequately, we believe, the terms of reference and what exactly the board will do. So in conclusion, and again, as my colleague Katie mentioned, most of the feedback we're giving has come from our experience with for innovative companies on the Innovation Hub website. We are strongly in support of the creation of a technology innovation agency, but we would like to suggest that international good practice in innovation funding be considered. My colleague Tech has already mentioned TechEd, and there are other funding agencies internationally that look at funding this whole innovation space in their countries, and typically this is by grants and low interest loans. But perhaps it would be useful to look at some of these examples before deciding on finality on this bill. And then we believe it's really important that TIA is seen as a facilitational body, creating this enabling environment to allow innovation to happen. If people feel safe and secure and supported, they will share ideas, they will come up with creative ideas, they will develop new technologies. And we are of the opinion that the current draft bill doesn't create this facilitational role for the TIA. And then the last point is that we really believe that a long-term return on investment should be expected, and possibly probably in the areas of employment and future company taxes, rather than short-term return on investment from shares and stakes in companies. And the last point of that paragraph, that the TIA really does need to be risk tolerant. There's a big funding gap in the market for small technology-based businesses, and the big reason for that is that the private sector is very risk tolerant in this really early stage. So again, we are requesting that the TIA seriously consider this. And thank you for that.
Thank you very much. The way I want to proceed is to take the other presentation so that we get into something else. So we'll just check if the thing is ready. Yeah, no, just this one. While we are connecting, I don't know if there is anything that members want to clarify as they move. Because we'll take questions and discussions later. If there's anything that you think you want to clarify what the presenters now, please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to establish the relationship between innovation hubs and the Gauteng province in terms of its sourcing of maybe the finances or resources or staffing. And any other agency, I think your colleague spoke about the aspects of Tongi Metro and its role. If you could just bring that into the picture for me, so I'd like to see.
Well, I think the innovation hub was actually created by it's a government agency of the provincial government of Gauteng. It's actually a project of Blue IQ, right? However, it works very closely with the Tshwane Metro. The specific work we do with Tshwane Metro is it's around the new project we call the Smart City, the Tshwane Smart City project, which is essentially a project to try and support the economic development of the Tshwane region using the knowledge base of the area. I mean, the area in Tshwane is just about all of your science and technology research institutions are concentrated in the region. And not only that, but I think our argument is successful cities worldwide are able to exploit that knowledge base to the economic benefit of those cities. It's a project or the concept which the city has in fact embraced, and it's in fact resulting to a project financed by the city. If for us as the Innovation Hub it's our own way of making regional impact beyond the precincts that we have created where we have this club company. But I think central to this smart city project really would be in creating high tech companies in the region. And also there's an element of broadband. I'm sure you're well aware that most of the cities in Gauteng are now talking about linkages via broadband, which I think is an initiative driven by the Office of the Premier in Gauteng. Now, some of the cities have already had some broadband infrastructure of some sort, some fiber network. Tshwane was one of those cities that had a fiber backbone, which was only used for traffic signaling. So the argument now is how can the city use that backbone
to look at a broader broadband rollout for both the benefit of the city and the citizens in the area. But for us, it's part of our regional impact and innovation hub.
The aspect of the resources, I mean, pays for salaries of the innovation hub, as I understand. But does it also facilitate the incubation process for certain loans to industry that, or not, or is that it's been separated? I'm asking this clearly to establish what criteria then you would lay down if you do that towards those particular entrepreneurs.
That's one of the major gaps. No, there is no funding for the entrepreneurs. The funding from the province is purely for the operational costs of the Innovation Hub. And that's where we believe there's a big gap, because we are turning away entrepreneurs, or let's say entrepreneurs start with us and they don't make it to the next hurdle because they can't get first round funding. And we've lost a couple of good entrepreneurs that fall into that category.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Innovation Hub is addressed to the idea of involvement on the part of the state in the operational activities of companies that would have been assisted by the Technology Innovation Agency. Is there any middle of the road approach perhaps that they would recommend that would not necessarily be exactly what is contemplated in the bill insofar as the involvement of PF is concerned? One of the presenters from the University of Pretoria in fact made reference to this very slide that that the Maleo spoke about, that is the Finnish model, and in fact suggested that in the context of a developing country such as ours, there would indeed be a need for some degree of involvement on the part of of an entity such as TIER, in the manner that is contemplated in the bill. But you might want to share with us what then would be a less radical approach, but at the same time, not amounting to an absolute, let's say, fail. So, would you like to comment?
I think by sharing with you the Texas model, I'm well aware of the fact that I think Finland is a different country altogether than South Africa. It's a very well-developed country with well-established national system of innovation. But I thought that the principles we can copy from the Finns is with respect to Texas. That the point of not, I mean, I think it's well and good that the state should be involved in funding innovation. But then the state should not necessarily interfere to a degree where we begin to take equity in some of the companies. I think that's not really possible. In other words, if our objective as government is to grow the economy, right, if the objective is very clear, I think what we want to do, we want to have as many companies as possible within the system, right, then that objective, then that should be the objective. The extent to which we get involved as government should have been to what extent, what sort of companies we want to turn out into the system. The issues around BE, for instance, might be very, very, very key to government, I'm sure. Maybe those could be some of the considerations in the criteria of TIER. But I think the thrust of our argument really is what TIA really should be doing is to support the creation of an innovation environment like Science Park incubation programs, which in fact leads to the formation of some of those companies, some of those products and services that are innovative. But I think we've got to be brave enough sometimes also to take risks, right, in giving companies money, in supporting companies, including some of those very big companies. If really our objective is to see more companies in the system. I know that the issue really would be what are the returns for the state? Maybe those returns should be the fact that I think we have more companies in the system. That is the sort of risk we think maybe we should be bold enough. I'm not sure if I'm answering.
I'm suggesting that it's a major issue. That's one that I think forms the crux of many discussions that have come here. Let's take the other presentations and return to this matter so that we allow members to engage and also to have a particular discussion on this matter, because I think we've had a lot of other presentations saying more or less the same thing. We'll return to this one. So let's just take the other presentations we're supposed to do that.
Okay.
Let's just do the introduction first. If you've got any other team members, do that. And like she said, the robot is screaming for you.
Honorable Chairperson, members of the committee, I'm here on behalf of LAIS. My name is Pierre Carroll, and I'm a patient in service about the LAIS. Here, my specialist is a member of LAIS South Africa. LAIS stands for
Latin America. Can you get the mic? So, is that better?
Yeah.
I'm not going to repeat for those that did hear, but I am a member of the South African Licensing Executive Committee, Sports Society. We are a society of professionals involved in the commercialization of intellectual property internationally. It's an international society, and I form part of South African, or the South African side of things. The members of LAIS are not just professionals, they are business people, they are financial people, they are people from all spheres of fields of expertise involved in the commercialization of intellectual property. So very much unlike, for example, the Institute of Intellectual Property, which is a representative institute of intellectual property lawyers, LAIS is a society of all walks of life, people being involved in the commercialization of intellectual property. The society consists of national and regional structures in more than 30 countries, and it has more than 12,000 members across the world. We have two main activities. The one is teaching, not just internally into the society, but also externally, approaching all kinds of fields, including government, as well as networking for those members that are inside it, so as to ensure cross-pollinization and understanding of our fields. My presentation, you will see, does not narrowly follow the wording in the PowerPoint presentation. There are copies available to everybody. You will also note that my presentation does not follow closely the actual results submission. I believe that is in front of you, and I'm happy to deal with any issue that has been raised in that. The nature and objective of LAIS is that it's a non-profit organization. It encourages high standards. It assists its members to improve their skills and knowledge in the commercialization of intellectual property. And it informs, very importantly, public, business, government about technology transfer. On top of which, we have various publications disclosing information regarding licensing, royalty rates, etc. internationally. One of our publications is a relatively well-known LAIS Novel. It's an international publication and is circulated all over the world. Just for those that have noted the apparent dichotomy between licensing and technology transfer, in some walks of life, licensing is seen exactly what it is seen in a narrow sense from a legal perspective, perhaps, the granting of rights to somebody else's intellectual property or technology. But from a licensing executive society, it's looked in the broader sense, all forms of commercialization, so be it sailing, joint ventures, self-exploitation, licensing, etc. It is the granting of rights to another for the commercialization of intellectual property or research outcomes four considerations, of which franchising obviously is just a specific one. With regard to the TIA bill, we wish to express our welcome and support of the bill and its objectives, as well as the establishment of the TIA. From our perspective, we believe it's of the utmost importance to have an umbrella structure, a hub to manage and control and deal with the various entities, bodies involved in South Africa from a commercialization of intellectual property perspective. And we believe not only in the public sector, but also in the private sector. However, we have noted a few issues in the bill that we want to comment on. Firstly, from a commercialization of intellectual property perspective, that is where we are coming from, and where we believe we've got the best, if not good, but the best skills to comment on. And secondly, for purposes of clarification, there are a few issues that we would like to address. Of the primary issues, the first one is the one that we have just dealt with extensively, and the chairperson quite correctly said that I suppose a few people have noticed the issue. And it's about the enabling versus competing nature of the powers, duties, and functions of TIA. I do not want to open what the chairperson has just asked to be part on, but in principle, Brad, our position is not that of the previous presentation where you have to, TIA should choose between enabling and participating or competing, the perception of competition, but rather that they make it clear what exactly their position is. It is not LEZ's intention to dictate to the TIA or to government or the legislature what form TIA should take or whether it should participate in the commercialization or merely enable others to participate. But should it participate, it must clearly be clear to what extent it will be. Many examples internationally, they participate in strategic technologies, in social welfare technologies, health, etc., energy typically. And that is not foreign, and it's not something only for developing countries. It is very clear that it's about developing and developed countries that certain technologies are close to the heart of society and not deemed to be suitable to be left to the private sector only. But if that is the intention, that should be addressed. In addition, if it's the intention of the TIA or of the legislature that the TIA must participate for the sake of generating revenue beyond mere self-sustainability, it should be indicated. If it is for purposes of self-sustainability, there may be alternative mechanisms, loosely referred to as levies, etc., so as to not be so in the face as an apparent competitor of the private sector. Please understand, we are not saying that they should not participate. We're saying it should be clarified to the level of participation or competition or activity, and that should then be addressed in perhaps the most, or the least rather, offensive manner or scaring of manner. Because at the end of the day, I think me and the previous presentation feels quite strongly about the enabling, the empowering, the building side of TIA, where there's little doubt in our minds that perhaps the biggest shortage in South Africa is not funding or technologies, as many people think, but in fact the ability to commercialize and protect, but more importantly, to commercialize intellectual property properly. The second issue is the scope of the innovation capability of the TIA, obviously from a technological perspective. The TIA bill talks clearly about inventions and innovations of a technological nature. And that is, at least from that perspective, clear. However, in some places it talks about intellectual property, or at least in one place, it talks about intellectual property from publicly financed research. And one immediately grasped at the corresponding bill, the intellectual property rights for publicly funded research bill. Now, whether that's intentional or not, again, we leave up to the legislature. But if it is, we wish to suggest that they make it much more clear that this bill is to be read, or that at least that specific provision is to be read in association with that bill. If not, then that should also be made clear. Once one looks at publicly financed research or all research. It should be clarified whether it is research per se or research and development also. LES submission has been made to the previous bill, i.e. the intellectual property rights from publicly funded research bill, regarding this very issue. The concept of research is looked at differently by different people. I think it would not be a surprise to most of those here if one says that if you mention to a researcher at a university in South Africa that he does development, he will have a heart attack. They do the research, at least they claim. Or let me put it this way rather, they believe they only do research. As soon as you take research to the point of commercialization, somewhere along the line you've done development too. From another perspective, the auditing or the accounting perspective, from another perspective, the tax perspective, from another perspective, the intellectual property law perspective, all of those will tell you that research and development is taking place. And I have very little doubt that the intellectual property rights and publicly research bills should actually read publicly funded research and development. So shortly, also from this bill, I think we must clear that up, whether it's purely research or whether it's research and development and it should be defined properly. I think simply put, if we talk about commercialization, whether we like it or not, we're talking about research and development. The second issue under that topic is therefore obviously the finalization of the two bills. If they read so closely, or if the intent of the legislature is that there is a linkage between the two, perhaps then one should look at these two bills, not necessarily concurrently in this finalization process, but at least take proper cognizance of both, so that the intent of the legislature is fed through and clarified from both perspectives. If one looks at the previous bill more closely, you will find that they provide for a national, or that PEP provides for a National Intellectual Property Management Office called NIMPO. I play in this field. I still have difficulty to fully grasp the difference between the two, particularly from a commercialization perspective. So everything that has been said beforehand regarding the apparent dichotomy or the competitive nature or the interaction or the wish of TIA to commercialize intellectual property be perceived as a competitor, more importantly perhaps as a custodian from a commercialization perspective of publicly funded research, then we must remember that that bill, the Intellectual Property Rights and Publicly Funded Research Bill, makes specific provision to be the end custodian of intellectual property that has been derived at by publicly funded research and which government felt that the university institutions, tertiary institutions, did not do what should have been done. Now, why are we hampering on the clarity? Because at the end of the day, this spells out the landscape for the commercialization of intellectual property in South Africa. In my previous presentation, painstakingly used to point, trying to point out, and I think did very succinctly, that the perception of the marketplace counts at the end of the day in their heads. At the end of the day, it is perception. And if it's perception to stay away because there's risk, they will do that, and I do not believe that is the intent, hence the wish for clarification. The third issue is the transition of the South African Inventions Development Corporation, or SIDCO, to TIA. In the research to our submission, we endeavored to find SIDCO and its exact activities. It was not that easy. We just not looked well. We found all kinds of references to things like Technifin. What exactly the position of those two institutions or groups of institutions are, I have to acknowledge, it is not clear in my mind. I wish to suggest that there perhaps some others too that have lack of clarity. What is definitely clear is that the present bill suggests that the cycle gets de-established. There's no question that if it did what it was supposed to do in a bill that was created or an act that was created, I think, as early as 1962. Thank you, sir. And hopefully it had some activity since then. It hopefully has generated some assets. So from no doubt, the appetite of that entity has to be dealt with before it is de-established with the enactment of a bill. But that is an administrative issue. For me, more importantly, is the commercialization of intellectual property, and the commercialization of that has been developed since 1962. So one would think that at least SciCor, alternatively, the technically relevant technicians, if they indeed are the relevant institutions, that those assets have to be dealt with. Okay? I would believe that they do not necessarily have to go to TIA. I noticed from the submission of the CSR that they said it must go to the CSR. I believe that it might not necessarily all have to go to the CSR. But that is lawyer's talk, and I apologize for that comment. I think what is clear is that the asset base, the activities, the businesses, etc., under the previous act, have to be considered and dealt with before the cycle can be established. Once we reach that, it is the stupid or the simple issue of, are we merely going to repeal the act or deregistrate the sidecar? And the previous legislature or the legislature with the previous act, in his wisdom, confused me terribly in realizing whether it is a creation of a special act or of a general act. A general act such as the Companies Act, or a special act as the specific form of legislation. I believe they created a hybrid. So I am not sufficiently legally skilled, and I do not believe that Les has incurred any specific opinion about the form of how they should be deregistered, but sensitivity should be shown, because at the end of the day, it's a company that was created by a special act. It is a hybrid form of creation that cannot merely be deregistered with the enactment of the bill. The next issue is the commercialization of inventions and innovations. As we, LES, very much stands for the creation and development of expertise to protect and commercialize intellectual property, we absolutely approve and support the enabling intent of TIA to do exactly that. As I said earlier, there is little question in Alias's mind, and in mine personally, that is perhaps the biggest shortage of this country, and in fact, internationally. There is no question that this is the shortage, the capability to commercialize intellectual property. For my sins, I sometimes have the opportunity to do presentation with Mr. Shuttleworth. Him and I have now reached the point where he talks and then he runs away, because afterwards I make the comment that he was the baddest, worst thing that could ever happen to South Africa. Yes. More particularly the worst thing that could happen to the commercialization of intellectual property, because everybody thinks they're going to make a few billion once they have an idea. It is difficult. It is high risk. That was coming cheap. But it is high risk. And therefore that is the skill that we perhaps need the most. However, we wish to caution against the mere apportionment, transfer, and decentralization of R&D and intellectual property derived from such R&D. We very much wish to suggest that due consideration should be given to research activities, research outcomes, commercialization endeavors, and the location of commercialization skills, and not just merely be passed on to specific entities. There are real skills at the various institutions over the years to be criticized, sure, as we all can do of all of us, but there are real skills, real technologies, real experts, real endeavors, real efforts. From a personal perspective, if anything is short in this country, it is the overall management and control and insight into what activities, what assets, what expertise should lie where. We find that there's a large amount of tackling going on, wrestling, arm wrestling, on all of those. So to give you a very short example, in my personal capacity recently, I was asked to look at an agreement between at least four institutions in South Africa, all publicly funded, to assist with the location of R&D activities, to manage who's going to help those intellectual properties and who are going to commercialize those. And this was all funded by a mining house, and it was one of those technologies that the DG has identified as one of the primary technologies with which we will fund transformation, namely mineral beneficiation. And for those that don't know, mineral beneficiation is perhaps one of the most upcoming important technologies that we could possibly fund transformation and all the endeavors of this country. Now, this whole project was about that. And there was zero insight that I at least noticed from who's going to do what. It was near just pure self-interest. Now, Mr. DG, let me keep my mouth shut. Certain definitions, therefore, gentlemen and ladies, should be given attention. Functions. The word functions are thrown around the bowl all over the show. It is one of the things that has not been defined. As a lawyer, I would prefer some clarity to what those functions really are. Otherwise, perhaps they could be replaced with things like duties, powers, etc., that have been identified and defined very clearly. Innovation. Innovation is a word from a dictionary and is generally used by people in the street, i.e. it's not a specific field of expertise that have come up with that definition. Versus, for example, invention, which is defined in the South African Patents Act and many patent acts all over the world. The LPS wishes to propose that the definition of innovation should be considered again. Perhaps just to make absolutely sure what you intend. We further notice that you use invention and innovations in a line continuously as if they are for the better. Inventions fall within the definition of innovations. Invention is a legal defined term. It may bring other complexities that you do not wish to incorporate into this bill. I would strongly suggest that if there's no other need for it, at least a need that has escaped us, that the word invention could be removed. And technological innovations are as clear as you possibly would want to be, or as limited possibly as you would want to be in an act like this. Research and development are dealt with, perhaps not adequately, but dealt with. The term invention I have dealt with. Please note one thing, that in the definition of invention in the bill, you talk about invention means any discovery or improvement. Now, patent attorneys are allergic to the word discovery in one line with invention because the Patent Act specifically excludes discoveries from patentability, hence inventions. So in itself, that is a conflicting term that is in conflict with the Patents Act. And you do not wish to override the Patents Act as you refer to it and incorporate it by reference throughout the bill, at least inventions, stroke patents, etc. So my suggestion would be, if you wish to provide for discoveries also, that they not be thrown into the same definition as invention. Innovation and invention is used throughout the bill, sometimes as a verb and sometimes as a noun. I come from the Free State and I speak Afrikaans initially, at least. I find it confusing. I believe others would too. Perhaps if you wish to define the term innovation and or invention, you should consider whether you want to give a verb-like or noun-like definition to it and use alternative wording to deal with the other. Intellectual property, etc. definitions have been provided for elsewhere and all over the world and in other legislation. I think you could use them easily without worrying too much about what they really mean. Perhaps that's not condescending. They have been defined properly elsewhere and they can be used easily and properly. Words like exploitation, commercialization, technological incubation, diffusion, and publicly funded research are used all over. None of those have been defined. I prefer to publicly funded research already. Perhaps it's not a bad thing to create definitions for those. I know those are words that appear all over written material. For example, in the Oslo Manual of, I think, 2005, I think it's the third version or the third edition, a lot of these terms are defined. The problem with those terms are that they come from specific contexts. that have ulterior or other meanings. Perhaps you wish to create your own definitions. Even if they replicate or are identical to those definitions, they bring clarity. Lastly, you've provided for refinement in terms of the Patents Act Control 4.3. It is perhaps the only very specific piece of provision in that entire bill. I believe it brings nothing to the table. We believe you could easily remove it, and with that remove a degree of complexity that I'm still grappling with. After having read that clause a few times, anybody, I invite anybody around the table here today to explain it to me clearly. Definitions and provisions to be made for board members, the chairperson, and the chief executive officer. Issues around that, the exact number of board members, whether the, I think, 6 to 9 number that has been provided includes or excludes the chairperson and the CEO, I'm not clear with. And again, clarity would be great. From a consecutive terms perspective, I asked a few people around the office what terms are allowed, and I had startling amounts. Now, none of them have PhD in math, so I'll grant you that. But a second consecutive term, is that the initial term plus a consecutive term, or is it the initial term plus a first consecutive term and a second consecutive term? Unnecessary. I think we can clarify that. If we may propose that, please. I conclude. We welcome the bill and the establishment of the TIA, and I absolutely support of the duties, the powers, and the objectives of the bill. We believe there are a few issues that could clarify it. We believe that there are a few issues that the bill should address, such as its participation in the commercialization of intellectual property, and to whatever extent it wished to go to participate, for that to be clarified, so that the marketplace knows exactly what the role of the TIA is. And lastly, we offer our assistance with finalizing the bill, the establishment of the TIA, and all other fields, as we are a non-profit organization, our intent is to assist everybody with the understanding of commercialization of intellectual property. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for the 10 years. It was a wonderful show. If you want us to remove something, you must say, look at the new
question. I would not be so forward to suggest.
You won't say you must try five, but it's the thank you very much. We'll just take you to the request for clarification quickly. After that, we take a 5-10 minute break whilst the next presentation for the Natal as a whole. We'll be taking the floor.
Clarity, in fact, the definitions are something that has been brought up in other of the submissions, but you mentioned some other definitions. What is that?
The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD, is an international organization. It has, I think, 30 or odd member countries, and they stand for, and they are a joint effort to assist the world with economic cooperation and development concepts. And they have prepared what's called the Oslo Manual, and they have gone at great lengths, and I've got part of it here, which I'll give you. They've gone at great lengths to define issues such as innovation, commercialization, etc. Very much the ambit that the TIA is in. Absolutely, sir. I do not believe South Africa is a member now, but it's freely available to everybody, and it has developing and developed countries as members.
Thank you very much. And let's take a copy and make a copy for members. So that, thank you very much for your offer. I'm sure that's your change.
I'll accept that.
Thank you. Members, let's take a 10-minute break and come back for further presentation. Thank you. We'll have a discussion and then also shortly the DST on some of the issues. Members, let's talk for that.
I members and guests. Thank you for the opportunity of talking about the TIA book. I'm really delighted that this bill has come about. Because I'm very actively involved in innovations and inventions, and at a personal level and also at a university level. Firstly, I'd like to just say that I am a scientist. I am working on the cutting edge of creating research fields, and then I am making discoveries which could be commercialized. And that's the kind of environment that I work in. Now, with those inventions, I have taken out provisional patents and PCT applications, and some of them are in fact being processed at the moment. And it's a very tedious and difficult process, costs a lot of money, and it's very difficult, and you just don't know what's going to make money. You know, one is on a new way of making biodiesel, one is a new antibiotic that works on MRSA bacteria. We have a drug discovery platform we've started, another invention for removing toxic metals from wastewater, and another one which may amuse you, a way for making the grass on soccer stadiums greener and make the grass grow better. South Africa has 1,000 large stadiums, so it makes it worthwhile. I have a spin-off company from the university that manufactures biocontrol agents, and we're one of, I would say, 3 or 4 of the biggest biocontrol companies in the world now, and we've got a longer pipeline than most of the others. So, in a sense, we are competitive worldwide, but capital-wise, we're not competitive. I have been involved in setting up 2 BRICs, which are Biotechnology Regional Innovation Centers. I was involved in establishing East Coast Bio, which changed its name to Life Lab in Durban. And then I personally set up the Plant Bio, and then I was chairman of the board of Plant Bio for 4 years before I resigned. And then I've been a recipient of 2 Innovation Fund grants as a principal investigator. Now, I mentioned the last 2, the Innovation Fund and the BRICS, because they are the vehicle DSG and DTI set up to fund innovation. And TIA, in many ways, has been set up to supersede those vehicles. And indeed, one of the questions I have is, what is the relationship between the TIA and those existing vehicles with all their staff and contracts and people that they're funding? If we look at the environment for innovation in South Africa, my personal experience is that there are very few venture capital companies, and they're really not interested in the kind of biological innovation that I work with. I've been working for 18 years on biological control, and we're still trying to make a profit. It takes at least 10 to 15 years to get a viable biocontrol agent onto the market and being marketed. And, you know, Heather Sherman, I spoke to her about funding our company, and she just said, no way. She wants to double her money in 3 years, and the basic strategy is to put the money in, take over the company, increase the value, and then in 3 years flip it and double the money. Okay? And as an inventor, I would lose control completely. I would make money, but I would lose control, and my invention would be gone. And given that if it's a technical invention, if people taking over it don't understand it, they're going to lose it, and it will collapse. So it's not very attractive, and they certainly aren't attracted to technologically complex inventions. Commercial banks aren't interested. We went to the Atala Bank, and they said, you know, if you wanted to set up a factory full of lathes, we'd give you the money tomorrow. But if you don't bust, who's going to sell a factory of biocontrol agents fermented food? Isn't anyone who wants to buy it? So no, we can't fund it. Because we're not going to have any security from them. So that is the kind of approach of banks. So no help there. My own environment of the university is openly hostile to innovators and entrepreneurs. One of my DVCs said to me, I don't believe commercialization has any place at a university. And he actively pursued people who tried to do innovations and made their lives very different. There are no incentives. If you look at the NRF, they provide significant incentives to publish, and the universities
promotion programs are all based around numbers of papers. The ranking of universities is by numbers of papers. There's nothing there about how well universities are commercializing. But what you have at the moment is a tragic waste of inventions. And I say tragic because if an invention is published, it cannot be patented. And if it can't be patented, it will never be commercialized. So my colleague and I discovered a new compound which solves the problem of aflatoxins. Now, aflatoxins kill many millions of people in Africa from throat and mouth cancer every year. Okay? These are fungal toxins you find in particularly grains, peanuts, and maize. Here was a solution. My colleague went and behind my back published the paper. And so that invention could never be patented. And because it couldn't be patented, the company involved pushed, said, I'm sorry, we cannot pursue this because without a patent, we can't get our money back. It's going to cost about $100 million to get it through all the top testing and environmental testing. So it was gone. Now that is happening on a routine basis, 1,000 times a year, with inventions. So by and large, the universities are publishing and perishing. The inventions perish, the academic gets promoted. My university doesn't have a TTO, doesn't understand the concept and doesn't see the need to invent it. Why bother with commercialization? Other universities have got TTOs and frankly some of them don't work very well. I have a friend that's at a major university with a TTO. They took her invention and they licensed it out. And they licensed to the wrong people. The project has died. So here was the world first. It's an outstanding product. The farmers wanted it, but they licensed it to the wrong people and couldn't manufacture it. So the product has died. The real tragedy is that this academic, who had a whole career in this direction, has dropped that direction and she's gone into another area which churns out more papers. But she has left the area of true innovation and commercialization. She is never going to get rewarded in that way. The second problem is that some of the TTOs drive a bargain where the inventor gets maybe 10% of the invention. And the university gets 90%. So what is the incentive for an inventor? And if there's three of you, it's down to, you know, a few percent. So I'm saying it's not a positive environment, and I hope the TIA will be in a position to tackle that. I don't know what ideas and concepts you have of tackling it, but as the major engine of discovery in the technological field in the country, they're doing a hell of a bad job of commercializing. And without the intervention of the TIA, it's not going to get better. If we look at the innovation support vehicles funded by the government, I would talk about the Innovation Fund and the BRICS. And I've personally benefited from both of them, and it's been wonderful. It changed the landscape, having access to those funds. And in the early days, it was wonderful, and one felt very positive. In more recent times, the concept has taken hold in all of those vehicles, and they do meet together regularly, and I suppose that's where it took hold. But that is that they need to become self-sustaining and independent, because they are independent trusts. And they see themselves as needing to be financially independent. And as such, they need to be commercial vehicles, driving a hard commercial bargain. They have to be profit maximizing. What that means is that if I go to them with a project, they're going to drive the hardest possible bargain with me, the inventor. And in a recent case, I was offered a deal where they got 90% of the IP, and my university got 10%. So I would have ended up with 4%. As you can imagine, that's not too attractive. I was bringing all the materials, all the ideas, all the expertise, and I was going to get 4%. So why bother? I will walk away. In another case of where Innovation Fund has invested a large amount of money in my research area of biological control, $14 million so far, we needed some investment capital. They offered us $3 million, and they wanted 51% of the equity. Our turnover was more than $2 million a year. And so for $3 million in cash, they were going to give us, they were going to take over 51% of the company, then they were going to sell us off because they had the control. So, you know, guess what? We walked away. Now we don't have that money and we're going to have to go very slowly.
We're not going to be able to hire the people we want to. We're not going to be able to make the exports we want to. But the problem is, this fundamental flaw, which has been raised by others, which is the TIA going to be a commercial entity, and therefore it's going to be a profit maximizer, and therefore it's going to screw the investor? Because it has to. It has to drive the hardest possible bargain. That's the nature of business. Alternatively, is it going to be a benevolent agency there to help and support and encourage? I mean, and there's a real dichotomy in this act the way it's been written here. Half of it is written as enabling and benevolent, and half of it is as a ruthless capitalist here. If we go to section 3, the objects, and if you look at that object, it's quite short, just that one paragraph. The first half it's the good Mr. Jekyll, and then the second half is the bad Mr. Hyde. The first half says to support the state in stimulating and intensifying. These are all positive things in order to improve economic growth and quality of life. Wonderful. But the second half is by developing and exploiting innovations and inventions. Well, I'm the inventor, and I'm going to be exploiting. Now, you can't actually be both. And truly, you have to decide. And that's where I agree with both the previous speakers. You really have to decide. Do you want to be a commercial venture capitalist, ruthless, tough, driving a hard bargain, and making a big profit? Or do you want to be an enabling agency out there to assist and benefit? And the question that was raised is how? And the answer is very simple. Loans, royalties, and tax. Every successful company that is established is going to pay tax. Company tax, personal tax, that. And that's the return. That's the financial return. Investors have a hard time. When we went to the Innovation Fund, we did a business plan where we valued our intellectual property at 90 million rand over the next 5 years. Given our pipeline and given the demand for our products. One of our products which we hope to register in this next year is the world market is $2 billion. And the existing product was just wiped out because the fungicide and the fungi have developed resistance to it. So here's the product that there's a captive market of $2 billion a year. But when we went to the Innovation Fund, and frankly it's not their problem, it's accountants. I don't know if there are any accountants here, but accountants don't understand intellectual property or ideas or innovations because they can't stick a finger on it. And quite simply, they cannot and will not come up with a figure for an innovation company, a startup company with innovations and inventions. They simply can't do that because there's no historical financial record. Now, how Google and the other software companies get evaluated, I'd love to know. Because they have nothing tangible. We have nothing tangible. We have the ideas, we have the concepts, and we have potential markets. But we cannot be evaluated. And so, again, this is the problem of equity. If you're going to buy equity, if the TIA is going to buy equity, how can you do that? Because you're buying equity for non-existent, non-tangible, inventions. What are they? They're concepts. They're not, they are intangible. So how do you put a value on them? If you can't put a value on them, how can you come up with a just and fair equity share? The situation where we were faced with an offer of 10% of the IP, frankly, we're in trouble because we need that money to do the project. And if we don't do the project, the opportunity will be lost. It's in the field of biofuels. And as you know, the biofuels is very hot, and we have, at the moment, a lead because we have the germplasm which no one else has. But if we don't get going, we will get behind. So what do we do? Do we accept hostile and damaging terms like that? What do we say? No, and then we don't do the research, and then South Africa loses a lot. If we go to
page 3. The memorandum on the objects of the CIA bill, section 1. It reads, Technological Innovation Bill provides for the establishment of the TIA as a public entity that is aimed at stimulating and intensifying innovations and inventions, and by creating an enabling environment wherein these technological innovations and inventions could be commercialized. I take this to read that the TIA is going to be a benevolent, enabling agency. And as an inventor, that's what I would truly like to see. But if we go to section 4, and 4.1A2, establishing companies, suggests that the TIA is going to operate as a commercial venture, either by itself or in joint ventures. And if it's in joint ventures, again, it's going to be involved in the profit motive. It has to be involved in profit maximization. Now, it's been commented before that government agencies work on a different time scale to particularly innovation companies. Innovation companies have to be small, fast, high risk, fast moving, lots of them go bust, doesn't matter, start up another one. Governments can't do that. And in fact, there's a major conflict of interest here between the PFMA, which says that no government agency shall take risks, unreasonable risks, and an innovation company, which actually has to take very high risks. And my experience with the BRICS has been that some of them have used that as grounds for not taking risks. And members of the board of those BRICS have said, we're not taking that kind of risk because PFMA precludes us from doing so. And the BRICS fall under the PFMA. So is TIA going to fall under the PFMA or not? And if it is, then it can't take risks. And then it cannot become a commercial entity in this field because the nature of venture capital is to take risks. So there we have a fundamental legal contradiction. 4.1.A3, acquire any interests, again, suggests that it's going to be a commercial entity in its own right. So effectively it will be a company. Now, I suggest this is the same problem that the BRICS and the innovation funds have faced, and that they've fallen between the two stools of trying to be enabling and trying to be profit maximizing, and it cannot be both. On the next page, 4.1A4, to draw together and integrate the management of all the other vehicles. I assume that this means the Innovation Fund and the BRICS, and I'm not sure what else. But if it is, there are two questions. What happens to the existing BRICS? And that's not laid out here clearly at all. And at the end it says that the budget will all go to the TIA. So if I was on one of those BRICS, I'd be rather worried where my salary was coming from. But my other question is, if both BRICS and the Innovation Fund are working flat out to do the job that they do, is this one TIA agency going to do the work of all the others? Or is it going to be an overarching body managing those others? Now, that's a very tricky relationship, but it's not spelled out here explicitly at all. It's assumed implicitly. And I suggest it might be useful to spell that out. What happens to those vehicles? And how do they relate to the TIA? Okay, the subsequent stuff about patents and inventions has been discussed previously. But again, it suggests to me that the TIA will own and hoover up all those patents, and they will have the job of trying to commercialize them. Let me say, that is a task I wouldn't wish on them, because it's an incredibly difficult job to decide which patents to go for and which will make money. And my own personal experience is that I've lost a lot of money. Okay, putting my own personal money into patents for inventions which were nice, but actually I couldn't commercialize, and possibly couldn't be commercialized. The second thing is that my invention got patented, and then a big corporation came along, and with a minor change came up with a superseding patent, which overran mine. I then had the choice, do I challenge them on that? Clearly I couldn't. The third thing that happens is that a big company like 3M or Syngenta comes along and steals your patent, and they come to you and they say, we will give you $100,000 for your patent, and you know it's worth several billion, and it's either $100,000 now, or you can take us to court, but you can't afford to do that, and it'll tie you up for the next 10 years in court. So patents are real double-edged sword. It's not a trivial matter. It's very difficult to manage, and I question whether a government agency wants to be involved at that level on a direct interface with the patenting process. To do it by proxy through companies is what makes sense to me. In terms of representation on board, I come up with the same point as the Innovation Hub. If there's only a 1% investment in a company, can the TIA demand a seat on the board? The second thing is that you run out of staff who can sit on all the boards, and I've seen that with some of the BRICS, that they simply ran out of staff to sit on board. And all boards tend to meet on the same week because it's convenient, you know. There's another problem with TIA members sitting on boards. In the case of the Innovation Fund, they have funded two competing companies, my own company and another company in Durban. And if they had equity, they would want to sit on both boards. Now, I would object to that, because I don't want my competing company knowing what we're doing. And yet, that's exactly what's happening. I know that Plant Bio has run into that same problem. They've funded competing companies. Now they need to sit on both boards. To me, that's a conflict of interest. I don't see how the board members can not actually inadvertently make judgment calls which they wouldn't have otherwise made if they didn't have inside knowledge. So I think that needs to be looked at very carefully. To return to the primary issue I would like to raise, and that is the TIA going to be a strategic, benevolent vehicle supporting the environment, supporting it by proxy, the development of innovations and the support of innovators and inventors? Alternatively, is it going to be a commercial vehicle driven by a profit market? Those are two very, very, very different agencies. And I truly believe that the TIA has to go one way or the other. It cannot be dichotomized successfully. The question on how it can get its money back of the money that is invested, and I would like to suggest if there are loans, secondly, if there are royalties, and thirdly, via tax. Both loans and royalties assume zero control. They are not driving commercial entities, and they're not assuming commercial expertise to do that. And that's the danger. In terms of procedural recommendations, there are just some fairly minor comments. One is under 6B, it says that anyone with a criminal record cannot be on the board. I'd like to suggest that applies to fraud, financial misdealings, or dishonesty. Someone who has a car accident and has a criminal record for manslaughter may be a very fine scientist and a real asset on the board. I wouldn't want to see them disqualified. So perhaps you could separate that out. The blanket thing of the criminal record is rather undiscriminating. Secondly, membership of the board is currently only for full South African citizens. And again, you may run into a shortage of full South African citizens with a particular kind of expertise you need to include permanent residents. I was asked by my university and another university to suggest that given the role of universities in generating inventions in science and technology, that it might be useful to have a defined university representative on the board. In terms of office, 8.1, if you simply add the word typically hold office for a period of 4 years, it then allows you to stagger the membership. Because clause 8.2 says that the membership will be staggered. Now, if everyone joins at the same time and they all have to leave 4 years later, then you don't have staggering. So the first set of boards, some would be at 2 years, some at three, some at four, and then you would have this automatic staggering of the board, and it fulfills clause 8.2. 8.3 says that members may only sit for two terms, I think that's very important because boards and chairmen tend to create dynasties and it can be unplugged. It also allows for fresh ideas. Remuneration under point 9. My own experience with the bricks is that some of the bricks had boards that weren't paid, and frankly, they didn't work. Well, those boards didn't function. It's not that they didn't do any work. The boards were not very functional. And the other boards had members of business who were used to getting paid business level remuneration, and then the bricks were getting paid government level remuneration, which is very, very little. And it's a real problem. If you want high class business executives on the board, you actually have to pay something that's approaching what business boards get. And that was certainly a conflict on our board. In terms of meetings of board, it didn't spell out when and how the chairperson will be elected. And the second issue is the CEO disqualified from being the chairperson? I understand that the King's Fee report says chairperson should not be the CEO, but it's not spelled out. The other thing is I would like to strongly suggest that you appoint a deputy chairperson at the same time as a chairperson, so that there's an automatic person to turn to when the chairperson has to recuse himself, be absent for travel, or is actually presenting on a particular issue. In terms of declaration of interest, it's not spelled out, but again, I'd like to suggest that it's simply a spelled out part of the procedure that before board meetings, all members have to sign a conflict of interest document stating their interest in the area. But the issue that I raise is this. If you can get people who have the background and experience, then there will be a conflict of interest because there will be potential conflicts of interest because they are indented. And they will read and see and understand things. The alternative is that you get people who don't invent things and then they don't understand what the innovation process is. So that issue becomes a real problem. Getting people on the board who are real experts, have lots of experience of invention and innovation and the difficulties of commercialization because they've done it themselves. But then they may have conflicts of interest. The trade-off is people who haven't done all of that, there's no conflicts of interest, but they don't have the expertise. So it's looking at that and seeing how do you resolve that and how do you recognize it and deal with it on an administrative basis. And then the CEO point 11.8, it says that the performance agreement should be in place within 6 months. That assumes that the KPIs are in place so that that can be done. My own experience is that they weren't in place, so it actually took us longer to do than 6 months. So it's just difficult to achieve that in that way. It also says that the CEO can be dismissed for unsatisfactory performance, but that isn't actually spelled out in any way. What would be unsatisfactory? And then my final point is that 11.9, there's no mention of a deputy CEO or a COO. My experience with the BRICS is that some of the BRICS didn't have a COO and some did. And the CEO ended a long time traveling internationally or nationally and was not in the office to run things on a day-to-day basis. So there was a leadership vacuum in those BRICS that didn't have a COO. Secondly, the way it's written now, 2 months after a CEO is dismissed or isn't around or isn't performing, an acting CEO can be appointed. Now that's a 2 month vacuum in activity and leadership. It's just too long. And having a COO in place makes a difference. So, you know, someone immediately assumes the acting leadership of the CIO. So it's just a small administrative issue, but it really, really makes a difference. To reiterate, my main point is I would like to beg that the TIA be considered as a benevolent enabling agency and to avoid going down the route of becoming a ruthless commercial entity in the venture capital mold. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that. Members, here we are. We've had our three fresh presentations from Les SA and the Minister for Brunatau and the Innovation Hub. Let me get your engagement. I'll come back to you, to the other, to the DG for some comments and to Mr. Smart. I'll come back to you. You request a 10 minutes? Yes. Yeah, we'll come back to you. Let's do it.
I'm going to ask the same question. The presentation here is from doing two caps, right?
Yeah.
Have you got also mandate consensus from the university, which is the cutting edge of a lot of, you say, research, but at the same time not necessarily the innovative part of the commercialization? What is KwaZulu-Natal University, per se, where there is a lot of research going on, feel about this, or would you rather say this is now at your personal sort of, you know, capacity in the establishment of your own businesses? I'd just like to know that. The other thing which I found quite interesting, which you mentioned about universities, which I've experienced myself for 4 years, is the fact that, you know, when they have these innovations that are developed through research, and they become commercial, they're actually generating money for the university, and they pack them up and throw them up. And it's amazing how many lost. I mean, there was a tremendously sustainable and viable, you know, operation there relating to essential oils, which, you know, Will Graven was running there. But why? You know, I just don't understand it. It would help the university to develop some other issues. But is that a general thing that's happening? It's the second time I've heard, you know, this happening, and maybe you can enlarge on that and just tell me where you stand in relation to this documentation that's being presented today vis-a-vis your two caps.
I have lots more than two caps. My primary cap here is personal, and that's much the safest to see it in a personal thing. However, I have discussed this with the acting DVC of research, Johan Jacobs. I discussed it with the DVC of my college, Peter Grice. I discussed it with the CEO of the innovation company of the University of KwaZulu-Natal, and I have their blessing to present it. In a sense, I'm one of the few entrepreneurs at my university. There's about four or five of us who are actively entrepreneurial and want to take not research but development into the commercial world. One of the issues I'd like to raise is this. Most academics who discover something, do not want to become an entrepreneur. Yes. They don't care about making more money. It would be nice. If they got a 1% royalty, they would be okay about it. Fundamental problem is that there is no one to pick up that invention and run with it. Now, the BRICS won't do it, the Innovation Fund won't do it. They want the academic to become an entrepreneur. And as I say, that just doesn't exist. We are chicken thieves. There are about five of us that I can think of who have any interest in being entrepreneurial. So, again, I go to the TIA and say, what is needed is a vehicle which will actually take these inventions and ideas and put it together with entrepreneurs to take those ideas and make them commercial. If that doesn't happen, then it's not going to happen, because the average academic will never suddenly become an entrepreneur.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, President. Taking just from your last argument, the same would go for your argument relating to the appointment of board. That you're raising the problem of appointing the type of board of people who are not experts versus the appointment of board of people who are experts and will have conflict of interest. My argument is that I don't believe that you need a board of experts. You need a board of decision makers. And obviously those decisions are informed by the issues put on the table with recommendations. And therefore, you don't need necessarily experts in that particular field to become board members, because that will be a disaster.
But you need people who can be able to analyze and look at issues as they are tabled before them and be able to make appropriate decisions, even if they are not, they do not have the necessary expertise in invention and innovation.
Just to respond, I would agree. It's not about the invention, but you need board members who can look at a good idea and say, I can see that idea and I can see the pathway to commercialization and I can see what the opportunities and the risks are. So it's having that breadth of knowledge and the breadth of thinking to be able to make a valid evaluation of a range of technical inventions.
Sure.
Okay. And but that's really a lot of issues that are a border contention here. Yeah? Among others are questions of TIA taking up stake, or like you put it to a prof, whether also they want to be a jackal or a hyena. This thing must be clarified. I think the GST will ask for particular information in terms of also what is the international benchmark analysis that they've got on some of the issues. The question of the PFMA restricting, the question of the issues relating to work vis-a-vis benchmarks and things like this. So those are matters, I think some of them were raised yesterday. And there's also some suggestion that the TA must particularly look into strategic technologies rather than taking up all being all over. I mean, that's just something that needs to be clarified. Definitions, I can think that the girl you've given us what's the name of the corporate name for that? Yeah, and just definition. We just want to, you can give it now. When you go away, you go backwards. So that members get those before we adjourn or whatever. We did discuss the matter of the asset register or the question of the balance sheet of technicians, both CSIR yesterday. They need to give us a report by next Friday so that when we take a decision, we take into account some of the issues that are raised here. A matter that keeps on coming up is relates to the IPR itself, whether we should put link into the concurrency of the two pieces of legislation, or how do we deal with that? And I think those are matters that we continue to engage. I'm just raising this to clarify and remind members of certain of the issues. But if there are any, if there's no other question, that I will take Mr. Smart. Oh, why don't you please come in and say Professor Muhammad? Give the chair. Prof, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I listened yesterday, I think carefully, to the CSIR between the TIA and SETCO. I'm not really all that sure, you see, that there is a tremendous advantage of TIA over SETCO. There are certain things that has to be done, and I think both of them will do that, you see. I think it was said that TIA would be really be a facilitator of research activity. I'm a little bit skeptical of that, but perhaps we will see that. I thought that SETCO had said exactly the same kind of thing. And maybe the person who gave the presentation, the question should have been asked yesterday, is to tell me exactly in what way you see TIA sort of being boss over SETCO. The other thing I really want to raise is, and I have raised this problem a number of times, but I want to acknowledge first of all that I'm going to call him Tsitsi because I know him for many, many years with my young children running around basically more or less in my home and through whom I have learned to know Soweto, Yin and my daughters and got involved in the politics and the politics today. They are still involved like you are. The point really I was going to raise about that is that if we talk about the research activities that will be pursued, I'm not so sure. You see, if I look at, I hear a lot about money, and that money seems to be a great motivator for pursuing certain things. Now, I cited yesterday already the case of Albert Einstein, who I'm trying to get the right words, who found out about a process, I don't know how to put it, of sound activating electrical instruments. You know, I mean, since the computers that you have today, the presentation there on the screen, I mean, basically that is turning, let's say, light into electricity to carry certain things. Einstein had published a paper on that sort of thing, and this is fundamental, you see, but he never pursued the money aspect of it. You know, it came later on that the elevator, the electric kettle, the computer does the presentation on the screen there are due to his insights about certain things. But he was not interested, or maybe he didn't see, but I think he wasn't interested in seeing the economic aspect of it. And I'm really just feeling, you see, the question was raised by TSII yesterday, you know, does the TIA take over the or do the same thing as SETCOR. And I thought really they are basically doing the same, but I think there was a different view that the CIA is a step ahead of that. I hope so. I'm making more comments than asking questions. You see, I'm highlighting there what Einstein had done. Now there are lots of people and lots of things who have done certain things and things go wrong. And I have cited this before, you see, but let me do it again. I happened to sit on a committee of a university that was assessing people's research to be funded. And one of the people there published a major paper of about 100 pages. And the committee went into hoops over this and allocated him a fantastic sum of money pursue the research. Unfortunately, I had read from another top mathematician just one thought in that paper which collapsed the whole theory. I'm not going to name the people, but the three top mathematicians who had found this out, it's not to the detriment of that person, because all of us do make mistakes, you see, and you prove fantastic things and you wonder after how it could be true, but you may have a initial mistake. Now that person made this mistake, but the committee, you see, was so impressed with this 100-page paper, never mind my protestations against it, but I was aware of the problem because I've seen it published by somebody else, and went ahead and gave him a fantastic sum of money. And I looked at somebody else who also published something and got a miserable sum of money. Now there you have people who could not really evaluate the mathematics involved. And that is the problem. I think the problem was raised here also. So I'm really asking, you see, what is the advantage of TIA over SETCOR, for instance? TSII spoke about that yesterday, but I say, you know, if you've got people who cannot properly evaluate that, then things go by the way. And so this really worries me a lot. I don't think I want to pursue that except for that one particular thing about what Einstein had done, and people are not aware, I think, of all the things he's done, the things I've mentioned, which resulted from his one observation about, certain electrical activities, which given the rise to by sound activity. But I think I want to leave it at that. I have spoken about this before, and so I don't really want to say much more about it. I'm just wondering, you see, when we set up the boards for these two bodies, and the question was raised, are we going to get people who really understand these problems? I'm not being nasty about anybody, that, but you see, the evaluations can also go very wrong. And that is the point I really want to make, is that, well, maybe I don't see, you see, but I haven't really understood the advantage of the TIA of the SEPCO. And I say to a great extent, this depends on the people who do the evaluation. And I'm really saying we must be very careful in whom we appoint there. There must be more than just, well, technicians who can evaluate money. But I'm going to leave it at that, but I want to just go back to Jetson. I'm sorry I called him that, but I've known him for many years, and I appreciate, I'm just expressing here, the value has been in my life and that of my children. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bob. Thank you very much. Gigi, I'll come back to you for an hour. I'll come back to you. But I think, Gigi, when you come back later, can you just clarify this point again about the relationship between Gia and talk also about the issue that you're making, maybe. The question you're raising about the evaluation skills and expertise on the board is quite important as well. With all these problematic limitations as well, and all these technicians always arguing as well about things, but it's fine. The Honourable Minister now says we want people who can take decisions. So it's fine. I'm sure we'll find our way around. Thank you much.
Mr. Chairman, from what Professor Lang has said and what my colleague has said basically, I would like the department to come back to us and come with a point of view on how can we assist universities to develop innovation. Because I think that is what the bill is aiming at, and that's what we're lacking to get into the bill and to make sure that we are going to do it. And for that reason, I would very much like to have an answer from the department. Because I do believe that if we start funding the universities or assisting them to fund innovation, then there will be more of them becoming involved at such an university. And that's where South Africa's future probably lies on innovation. The other thing is, in the presentation from Dr. Jill Schultz, they referred to, on page 13, TIA strongly supported our creation of a TIA but recommends international good practice. Is there a possibility of us getting hold of such manuals on good practice? Because I think that's what we need to embark on as well, to make sure that whatever is done in Finland can be used as a guideline. We need as a committee know what are these examples. Maybe we'd like to put it into regulations and so on. And then my question would also be to Dr. Sushaw's. The reputation of innovation hubs, is that not something that this committee should also consider? Because I'm not sure, but I think the only innovation hubs that exist is the one at Stellenbosch University and the one at King Khalsa.
Thank you very much for the question. I'm sure we can see what we can do in terms of getting some of this documentation to you. The second question about innovation hub, there is a study being done at the moment by CISA, which is a joint initiative between the BST and the Singapore, looking at piloting two additional current policy governance, one in the Eastern Cape and one in the Western Cape. So I think with time, a model model will probably evolve for both of these regions. But we would support what you say in that there is a need for, whether they are fully fledged or clusters that encourage innovation, but certainly there need to be more of these in the different regions of the country.
Mr. Chairman, with respect to looking at examples from other countries, what I would say is that South Africa will have to come up with its own particular mixture, in the sense that, for example, in the States, there are a lot of venture capital companies, and that means they're competitive with each other. So the investor can go to 10 VCs and play them off against each other to get a better deal, because those VCs are competing with each other. The problem here is that there's only two VCs that work in the field of biotechnology, for example. So there's no real competition. So I'm just saying that we can look at Northern Hemisphere mixes and how they do things. But in fact, we're going to have to come up with a different package here, because we won't have particularly the commercial engagement with inventions.
The point, a few years back, I visited China from Mohammed, and I went to one of the universities, and I was very impressed. I came across an ex-professor from that university. He had a polytenum and he had an earring. His specific job within that university was really looking after commercialization. Because he knew the university environment very well, he knew exactly where to go about it. And it was a very interesting problem, because not only was the university making a lot of money out of the research that was commercialized, but I think even the researchers were benefiting out of it. And I'm saying this because it's not impossible that that could happen. And I know that there are very few such professors here within our environment. And I'm glad that I think it's happening within your own university. I think our argument really is around creating such an environment. We think that there's a lot of skill within South Africa, and I think the problem with a lot of that skill is within silos. The sort of program that we're pushing for is collaboration between various aspects, for instance, some of the big companies, collaboration between big companies and small companies and research and universities. And I think that's one of the spaces where TIA could play in encouraging that sort of collaboration to happen. But also, to also take the risk that I think there is innovation in some of those big companies, and maybe we should seriously look at funding it. If we could jump, have that mental signal, remove that mental block that they have nothing wrong in funding that, if it's in the interest of a bigger picture of the economic development in the country.
I think the last two, I think they're coming up. I was going to take response, of course, Mr. Dobell here and Professor Lane. Maybe let me take you, Mr. Farrow, first, so that...
Maybe
also
respond to some of my
theories.
Thank you.
Just before you go, let me take this one. Simply suggesting that we organize Professor Ponytail and Thierry and in the university. Is that what we should do?
I don't want to think that it's the only place that one needs to establish that type of, facilitation. But it should be across the broad sector, including the industrial design aspects that we heard yesterday about, and even the man in the street in the back workshop that has managed to create something that would be able to access it. But my question really was just, relating to more how the TIA would be able to reach that particular, whole broad section of innovators within the current agencies that are operating and even without that. Because certainly, I think the South Korean model that we heard about yesterday seems to be quite a successful one which we can learn from. And, my question then comes back to the department
and to the researchers of the and the authors of the particular legislation, because that's what we're going to be dealing with, as to whether in fact they have actually been out and looked at other models which could be applied here, as the Norway one which we saw today, and other ones, because, you know, we don't want to reinvent the wheel. I think the current situation is that there seems to be a whole lot of disparate agencies operating in the country which, you know, don't seem to be able to be brought together and someone get a grip of what's going on and actually identify and then move it to the next step, which is usually the funding aspect of it. So, Chair, I'm just wondering whether, you know, when the DST gets the opportunity, they can actually just relate to those things. They have been referenced right the way through this public hearing process in the last couple of days, and I think it's very important that we actually understand clearly how this particular bill is actually going to do that without having a cumbersome, clumsy process of, you know, of enabling the department or this agency to find hundreds of board members, literally, which is what it's talking about, to go out without that. And yet to know that we've still got some comfort about the investment that they're making in those innovations or inventions. So I think that's the key issue that we've got to address as a committee. And hopefully from there try to see how we can do some amendments to what we have and to massage it and to come into this one.
Thank you very much. I'm sure that DGS catch up both to Mr. Blanchet's point and that one of Mr. Farrell. We'll come back to it later. Let me take Les from Africa, Elias from Africa first. You wanted to respond to that?
Yes.
You might have to come to the mic, because we're recording it. I should have warned you, right? We're recording whatever you say.
No, I'm not in evidence.
I may be wrong, but there seems to be a perception by some people around here that a bill like this needs to deal with every detail we can think of. And perhaps this is a point better made by the department or the parliamentary legal advisors that operate. But from a graph perspective, one can move between the two extremes. The one of a very clinical, cryptic bill, leaving a lot for the minister and the department to spell out, or on the other side, a very detailed document. Without putting a personal slant on it, I do prefer the present style. One must be wary of not spelling out too much detail and trying to manage the process here. Having said that, there also seem to be a lack of knowledge about the tech transfer offices at the various universities. And again, perhaps the department would better deal with that. So I think we must be wary of not knowing all the elements that are already out there and have been created over the years in the intellectual property commercialization landscape. And my latest personal understanding is that this is the final I on the dot on the I. And I'll perhaps not a bad time if I may propose that we get an apartment just to deal with those issues, because everybody runs around in circles and it seems like the department has the right wording.
Okay. Thank you. Please, come up as well. I feel like you're 10 minutes. I haven't changed my mind.
Did you give the slide?
Yes, I did.
Oh,
okay. Mr. Tim and our fellow members, thank you very much for letting me have another 10 minutes of it here. And just actually hearing this morning from Innovation Hub, who said that innovation must lead to commercial products for us, and the gentleman from Liz, or actually was really, really interesting in talking about how intellectual property is managed. I have actually brought along a technology
product over here, all right, which is wholly South African, all right, to demonstrate firstly how we make six presence in international market, right, but also to show the shortcomings there as well in terms of our fee. And I also talked yesterday of a past innovation culture in South Africa, which has come over from the apartheid military complex, and that actually, while like in the Second World War, generally failed to commercialize this knowledge, right, and to also show how important in industrial design is here as well. Just to go back a little, right, in the Truth and Reconciliation hearings, right, a number of private, right, technology companies were highlighted for how they benefit through a process. Right? I don't want to get into all that, but to highlight that firstly intellectual property was ignored, and that secondly, these companies were funded heavily for R&D, right? So now if we park that and so now what happens in new South Africa in terms of those companies, right, and innovation. This project over here, we were called in part one of these companies. And they, first of all, could not accept that industrial design is something you pay for. Okay. So they actually forced us in to a small field with a heavy rod geon. So I ran a small little company which, as I mentioned, won a fast technology top 100 award. Right. But what happened here, all right, is that actually we forced to share, right, in this huge risk, okay, and we had to fight extremely hard to convince the company to design a product which the international market would accept. Just to tell you, this is RFID technology which the department has highlighted, right, as one of the next huge big things. Okay. We were up against tenders from some of the largest companies in the world. And so
South Africa one. Okay. There is the product. Right, I can show you here. Right, it's an industrial product. And all right, over here, just as this CE mark. And it tells you there's highly sensitive silk mirrors in here, all right? And to see this CE mark, all right, you have to be able to drop the product from 1 meter. Right on a concrete floor, and it has to work again. Should it not work, they want to test it. Right now, building. So I still design that solve that problem. Okay. The pointer is actually on to win our award, and this product over here is receiving huge export orders to the value now of ₹500,000. This large company turned around and certainly not paying the royalties at all. Okay. And it's a situation, all right, that comes from a part that's right where they have no respect for intellectual property at all. I couldn't believe it. Right. I argued it with the CEO who patiently said that he would run my company, right, and he went ahead and he really did that to the point that he said rid of my stock, the bank came and took my motor car, and then I came for my house. So the point that I'm making here, right, is I received an award from the president of a country for a contribution to South Africa. Yet, this is our South African culture, right, and prisoners actually treat them. And the seriousness of this, right, is like a church recently in a place to industry. You've probably heard where the huge companies were making huge profits on fraudulently upping the price of trade, and government stepped in, right, and sorted out this fraud risk. So what I would like to ask is there a mechanism through the CIA bill as well, which protects all parties here who have worked hard, but I just want to also I think, I mean,
generally we heard so many interesting thoughts and present sessions of this dialogue, and I certainly applaud Parliament, right, and comments, right, in the overarching goal here, right, to use technology to help South Africa. Right, and I think if we all work as one, right, because it's a national system of innovation, which includes stakeholders should work around one hand. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you very much. I think this point is very important, and I think it was made by the Minister President Matam as well, just to how these vendors are sometimes taken to the right and they walk away. So, I don't know, you might have to speak to Mr. Dobell here, he's an agent lawyer, to check. Just to check, you know, if that case of yours is not worth pursuing again. No. All right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for the brother once again. GZ, I want to thank you for the next 20 minutes. Just to give a perspective and maybe respond to some of the issues. Lunch will be ready, essentially ready now. We'll go for lunch at 1 o'clock. We're not coming back here for lunch. It will be across here. Yeah? Lunch will be ready. We invite all of you to join us for lunch.
Where is the assembly sitting? When? Today? No, tomorrow.
Chair, members of the portfolio committee, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, firstly, I feel bad that I am dominating the DSP responses. I realize I am the DG, so maybe I should, but I am supported by a team. People around me, and I'd like to upfront acknowledge their contribution, I think, to this work. I'd like to tell a short story. I think I have told it before the committee of a professor of physics who was going around to talk. And one day he was in, and he was sharing his frustration with the driver that he is not able to do the presentation. And the driver said to him, "Well, it's so easy. I've read this presentation many times. I think the presentation did very well. When the question time came, he couldn't answer the question. He said, these questions are so easy. Even my driver sitting next to me here will be able to answer. So I'm probably doing the same here. These questions are so easy." But we really appreciate the opportunity that both the portfolio committee has afforded us to present, I think, the bill. But equally, even more appreciative of the presentations and the contributions that I think we've had since yesterday. So, what I'd like to do, I hope my counting is correct, is to respond to what we have heard, and I will do it in 6 points. The one is the issue that relates to suggestions around definitions and the redrafting of some of the chapters of the bill. And we appreciate the suggestion and we take the opportunity that is presented to us to do this. However, I would like to caution against playing around with words at a semantic level. Because one of the things, at least for me, that I have learned in this 2 days is that you can easily quote something that in your mind works in a particular phase of the innovation chain and it makes perfect sense. And so someone who is not in the same mental model as you may disagree with you fundamentally. And I think for me, for the portfolio committee, and perhaps for the members of the public that have given their comments, I would ask that we really take caution. Yesterday, when we made our presentation in the morning, we tried to be very careful and selective in indicating what is it that we are doing and why we're doing it and which part of the innovation chain and what is our understanding of the challenges that you need to address in the innovation chain. I've quoted some of the misconception issues that have driven people to make comments in a particular way without picking up on sections, but I may want to do this in illustration for some points that are down the line. But so that's the first point, and I think to some extent Theo made this point in his last intervention to say you have to be very, very careful, because even yesterday we talked about the venture capital fund. If you use that word loosely, venture capital fund has a different stages that it applies in the chain. And if you don't describe what challenge it's addressing, a venture capital fund in the middle of the chain operates differently and addresses a different set of challenges than the one that is in the market. And the one in the early stages. One of the misconceptions I've had is that the TIA funding is a government funding. You can't say that. We have other funding instruments that are supposed to address some of the issues that people raise. And I think this, to me, it would be the crux of how we deal with this issue. So having said that, let me take a bite on the, first bite on the cherry around this issue of equity that has been, I think, one of the major concerns. And upfront, and repeat what we said yesterday, to say we don't see TIA as a commercial entity. We see TIA as a facilitatory, an entity that is supposed to act and facilitate the activities of assisting ideas, research activities to go into the commercial space. If there are current practices at the moment where organizations and individuals have pushed, I think, some of the intent, you know, in a direction that should not have been, we would like to apologize up front, and maybe it's our responsibility as a DSG and of course the portfolio committee to make sure that the original intent are not being misused by the people who are then given the responsibility to execute this. But I don't think, again, one should throw away the baby with the bathwater. A suggestion, for instance, around this issue of equity is the issue of loan royalties and tax. Again, one must be careful there, because it depends what loan you're asking us to provide. If, and depending on where you are in the innovation space, there are there are entities, some government entities that are providing them. There are government entities that are taking royalties on some of the funding instruments that they do. Another point. So again, generically say loans, royalties and tax, and saying that you have to have collaboration between the three major partners and that will solve the problem. I really think those statements, in my view, need to be looked at very carefully in the context of what you have to achieve. So having said that, what we would like to propose, and having said this, is that we understand that we need perhaps in the bill to indicate something which I'm going to call complementary assets that TIA has to have to bring along in the way that it ensures that the funding that goes into individuals, private sector companies, as well as the publicly financed institutions, are really doing what they're supposed to do. They take a company from step A to step B. They take an idea from an idea into a product. And these complementary assets can come in a variety of forms. Yesterday, we had a very interesting input from Dr. Vessis from Ecolibar that explained
incubation. And again, I'd like us to be careful here. Yesterday he made a very, very interesting differentiation to say that what the innovation hub in terms of incubation and what CISA does is in a particular phase in the innovation chain. And therefore what you do in that incubation activity is different from the type of incubation that you have to do in a company that's been set up out of the publicly financed research, especially in the early stage of that. And the type of complementary assets that you need are different. So again, this thing of being careful in the wording of that you put what you are addressing, and therefore, so the suggestion by Lair, South Africa, that you then need to state exactly what are these complementary assets that we want to bring in this field, something that we are really going to look at. Whether you have to differentiate maybe some of the sectors and say definitely in these sectors. What I would like to say is that we may not want to look at the sector, but we may want to look at something which we call what is in the public good. And maybe that is the area where in terms of holding equity or whatever form that we propose. But I'd like, in my view, to appeal to all of us that as government, we have a particular role, in my view, to play. And I like what I've heard someone saying, we are a development state. And therefore, again, I'm going to talk to this point later on, that when I say that I went to Canada, or I went to Finland, and this is what I saw, and I think this must be applied in South Africa, colleagues in the department, they know that if they say that to me, I look at them in the face with a blank face, that says, you haven't told me anything. Tell me what Finland, Canada did when that country was at this stage of development around that issue. That is the question in the benchmarking that we should be talking about. And therefore, I like the idea that talks to something that says, even when we look at these international benchmarks, we have to be extremely careful. Don't look at the benchmark now. Look at that benchmark when that country was at this stage of development. And we have different views, and I'm afraid to say that those views might be actually driven by our own ideas and ideologies, and we have to keep that in at the back of our mind. It's not for me to make that call, it's not for the committee to make that call. Before I lose this point, I do like to say that we've traveled this journey. So as a department, both of us, culture, science and technology, now science and technology. We also, much as people have their own experiences that they've brought in, have our own experiences. I'd like to make one point to illustrate this point. Innovation Fund, when it started, was done in the Department of Science and Technology, within the Department of Science and Technology. And this suggestion of soft loans is something that we've tried. I'm afraid to say in certain instances there are successes, and in some cases, and unfortunately in the majority of cases, we threw the baby with the bathwater. We are still today having litigation with some of the consortium members, entities that accepted public funds, and they promised to deliver something like that. And we understand the fact that this is a risky area. You then come back to say, how can we support you to take this thing to the next level? And this is where the disputes have come, without asking people to pay back the money. But to make sure that as government, the original objective of that funding goes into its logical conclusion. So I'm saying that we also have that, and we can give you the numbers, and you'll be shocked. And we also therefore need to, again in this point of equity and the complementary assets, and what is our role as government in the development state, we have to be very, very careful. But as I say, we will go back, we will take the comments that have been said and see how we can draft that into the field so that it reflects the concerns that have been made. But I'm saying when we do that, we are not going to probably go away completely with what we perceive as the role of government in the development state and the challenges of innovation causes in the part of the chain that we have defined. And so even when we come back and respond to these issues, we will give a rationale why we proposing this drafting of the bill, what is motivating us, and how are we responding in part to the comments that have been made, and how we are addressing those. And then I'd like to move on to some specific legal issues that have been raised. My esteemed colleague here has taken note of those. And I'd like to perhaps quickly here raise two or three things. The first one is that there are issues around the appointment of the board agency and the funds and all of that, the remuneration and other. There are two issues. One is what Theo from this raised, that we have to remember this is a bill. We are not going to write a bill to an extent that says if someone who receives the money disappears, this is how we are going to pursue and find him in whatever hold we have. So that balance is the point you make, Theo. We have to strike that balance in terms of write the bill in such a way that it stays the intent that is not vague, so that if there are disputes, you know, the minister and the department is able to do that. But let's not ask the bill to give an operational plan of how TA is going to operate. And we will try and deal with those issues. Now, the PSYCO issue, I think, Chair, you've articulated that, and the CSIR would work with yourself. One request that we'd like to make is that in that process, if the department could also have sight of whatever they're submitting to you. And the reason for that is that if we have to redraft that clause in the bill, we would have to make sure that we have the same information as you, so that when we have to adjudicate on that, we are all on the same page on the issues that have been raised. So that's the first point that I'd like to make. But I'd like to take this opportunity to also explain Professor Mohammed's concern that what is the role PSYCO and TIA. Probably TIA has been set up to resuscitate the original intentions of PSYCO at a national level, plus more. And we'll be happy to explain what the more is, in the sense that PSYCO was mainly responsible for just having investment in and taking the research into the marketplace and so forth. So we're doing a little bit more than that. The consultations, as I say, we welcome the opportunity to study like a week more. What we'd like to invite some of the colleagues that have made presentations in terms of some of the issues that they raised is to extend, I think, an invitation to them that the department is more than willing to work with them in dealing with some of the specific concerns that they have. And I'm not, on the basis of what I said earlier on, going to agree with everything. On the basis of, I think, my earlier contextual statement, because if we have contextual misunderstanding, I think this is a democratic country. Let's say thank you very much. We've had you. This is our view of the portfolio committee. But, I'm not saying it in an arrogant way, but in a way that let's agree that there will be points where we differ. We should agree to disagree on the basis of the facts and on the basis of a well-defined, agreed set of the intentions. The IPR bill versus TIA interface is an issue that you said is important. Our understanding, at again, the simplest form, is that the IPR bill is a bill that aims to encourage, or is a bill to get the function to provide and to assist individuals, mainly publicly financed institutions, to make sure that there is an environment to encourage the translation of the research results into products. This would include, for instance, making sure that there are disclosure policies within the universities, and there's an agreement on how the university, the inventors, and the tech transfer offices have an equitable way of distributing the proceeds of the inventions that are made. So it's a function bill, it's a bill that says the function. It does talk about the need, therefore, to support these institutions by the creation of NIPMO, which will then provide the necessary support that you need in order for you to deal with these challenges that inventors have to deal with in a publicly financed institution. And this is some of the things you raised yesterday with the SMEs, and this is the issue that you raised at the investor's end. So we'll probably begin to have set a norm and standards in terms of, but we are not going to set up technology transfer offices at the university. It's the responsibility of the university, but we
as the state has a role in ensuring that the university has the same thing with the CSIR or any other contract for that matter. And then you'll have an office, which is a NIPMO office, which will provide all the necessary incentives at a higher level. Now we can then again argue where that office needs to be situated, and then this is something that we could have a look at, and then can raise it in the next response that I will bring back here. Now, two last points, Chair. The one is this issue that, in my view, came up in wasn't said directly. This is my reading of the implications of some of the things that were said, and then by a number of interventions that were made, that if we should be careful not to use TIER to be a solution to all the problems that we have in the funding space. We should remember exactly what is the intention of TIER and what it is not. If there are gaps in the funding in the innovation chain, this is what you said, Chair, let's address that problem. You know, and that's a strategic question that should not be confused with what the bill is going to do. Again, I can quote examples to illustrate my point. If we talk about the funding for the innovation park, and we feel that there's a gap in the system, let's address that. If we feel there's a funding that deals with loans, soft loans, let's deal with that. If you say that should be in TIER, we're happy to look at that, but we will give responses into that. Because, I mean, let me give you short brief as to why I think I'm saying this. If you say the biotech sector's growth in South Africa is dependent on only TIER funding, I would argue that that's a real mistake. We only play as a department in a certain part of the innovation chain. We have other government departments, can mention them, and that's got a suite of instruments. Now, if you say TIER facilitates that discussion with those institutions and other government departments to make sure that there's a proper handover between what you do at TIER and the other instruments, let's have that conversation, but let's not have that conversation and say that it should be, in other words, that's what TIER should be doing, because we also have a responsibility as a government department not to encroach on other government money. And again, the point that I'm making is that when we make these interventions, let's have a full spectrum of this space so that when we make decisions, we make them as informed decisions. What I'd like to also raise as perhaps the last point to illustrate this point is that there was again an issue yesterday that we have assumed that innovation only comes from publicly financed institutions, universities, and private sectors. And we would like to remind the House that the DST has shared with you, and we are beginning to share this with the community, and that ask the members of the public to read our DST 10-year innovation plan, which now is published, I think, the competence standard. To either say the point that we are not thinking that the private sector, both large and small, is not part of the innovation chain. Those competence centers, amongst other things, are instruments where we have university science councils and at least private sector working together, defining a single research agenda that is going to be important for the country. So again, this issue of people raising issues which are not necessarily, I don't want to use the word correct, but addressing another problem, but bringing them to address the TIER issue. So those are my quick responses, Chair, but we will spend another weekend, like a couple of weekends, to make sure that when you are ready for us to come and have detailed responses on generically the issues, rather than, I don't think it would be fair for us to respond to individual presentations that have been made, but we've heard at a high level what the issues are in relation to the bill and we'll do our utmost there, utmost there, and utmost there.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think you've covered a lot of ground here, and certainly we will receive a copy from what we get from the CSIR. You can also say that maybe they can send it to you at the same time that they give us a copy and arrange for it. I'm not sure if there's anything that is unclear before I join the meeting, from what the DG has said, from particularly members, and also your invitation, DG, that stakeholders can start liaising with the department. I'm not sure who's the contact person or whatever, but I'm sure they can find some way of liaising with the department and so on. You have heard a complaint yesterday about people who are trying to have a dialogue with you and couldn't. I'm sure you can.
Chair, I hope my concentration span didn't fail me at when the DG was.
Okay.
The issue that Mr. Smith raised about what he sees as the central role of industrial designers, if you look at their presentation, at the very beginning they seem to be opposed to the very creation of TIA and of course the whole range of complaints that they have and so forth, but those are not really issues that we should be concerned about at this point in time. They could be addressed elsewhere, I suppose, but what then would be his response to especially what he said about design being innovation and so forth, and in his view, that not being catered for here, I would like to understand whether, in his view, materially, that in fact the true state of the situation, that people like Mr. Smith and Mr. Maneka are not necessarily catered for in terms of the goods.
Thank you.
Chair, let me be seen by. Have moved up the ladder in terms of picking up my diplomatic expertise. I would put this issue of industrial design in the same category as the issues of ingredients that are required for you to commercialize. And I would not necessarily say industrial design equals innovation. I would say industrial design is an integral part of an ingredient that you need in order for you to take an idea. And it may not happen in all the things that you take. You take innovation in a simplistic form as an idea that you have to take. In some cases, maybe you will not need industrial design. And therefore, the point that it is a component of what you do, but it's not necessarily equal to innovation. That's the first point. The second point that I'd like to make is that it is also about a strategic decision that you take as a country or a system. Reference yesterday was made to South Korea. Now, if in our strategy as a country, we say that we want to manufacture products that we want to put in the marketplace, and as part of that strategy, you will need to then have an industrial design capability where it's required in the work that you do in this chain. And therefore, again, be careful in terms of making sure that you're not saying industrial design equals innovation, but I'm not saying then you don't need industrial design. Maybe let's interrogate that around asking perhaps after the TSC to say, what is your strategy to make sure that the country is ready, if not, why not, to have this strategy that says we want to put certain products in the marketplace, and what are the things you need to put in place and how do you resource it appropriately. Thank
you. Mr. Blanchet,
Mr. Chairman, I want to make the comment that the department has now realized that it is now our book. The book now belongs to this committee. And from what we have heard from role players is that they are scared that we will establish an agency that will become a recruitment office of directors to serve on boards. And that is surely not what we intend to do with this. I think our committee wants to establish a goal from the input that we've had and the input that we still would want to have, make sure that we develop a system out there that will help inventors to make changes in South Africa and to become real entrepreneurs in South Africa. And that's the way I see the book, and that's the way I see the function of the department from now on as far as this bill is concerned, to help establish that.
But I think it's correct that the money is ours, but we look into everybody else and want to get some use from the club that the box of care of the committee at that. So whatever views, whether I agree, we agree, disagree, we'll engage them until we come to a point where we've got the final answer. So the logic is correct, but we have also invited the department to sit with us so that we can also share from their own experience in other areas.
Lawyers are not often seen as the protectors of public interest. In fact, it would be bad for cash flow. But I honestly believe the comments around members on boards have been taken to an extreme. Internationally, there's a question whether one puts a representative on the board of the investee company or entity. There's a lot of pros and cons for it, and we've heard about conflict of interest and things like that. Generally, the King Commission frowned strongly on putting a representative on a board merely to look after shareholders' interests. They have various responsibilities, those directors. So I think we must not throw the baby out with the bathwater, and that is merely a perception than in fact a provision in the bill in protection of the TSD. Secondly, with regard to the design, the DG's addressed the issue where design and industrial design is secondary to the innovation. And I 100% support his approach there. But don't make a mistake, there's another type of design that is the very technical innovation that you are talking about. And I have no question, at least in my mind, that is amply provided for in the bill. That bill does not exclude technical innovations where those innovations are captured or reflected in a three-dimensional design or even a two-dimensional design. So technical innovation includes innovations that are encumbered in designs, whether they are two-dimensional or three-dimensional.
I think there's a minor point. Thank you very much, TG, for the explanation. I think, in my view, the extent of TIA's And I think that for me brings to mind the issue of the trading industry funding instruments and the extent to which there would be alignment between TIA and trading instruments. I know it's an operational issue, but how would that pan out? Or perhaps maybe the recommendation really should be that there is close alignment and collaboration. Because that
then, in fact,
will result in
tears of it. Time on the Swiss Parliament, this is in my own name.
We've been putting clothes and stuff. Okay.
It's my daughter.
Just a short one, please.
Yes. At the just wanted to clarify the field design, because I was actually speaking with in that concept of national strategy set up for us in order to be developing power field to start, right, which is in the aim to get right now as the CIA will say that both agents will control strategies that the agents
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm sure you've clarified it in effect. But please also take up the offer with the department to have an engagement with them on some of the issues that you're worried about. They call you Steve. We continue to call you Steve. Yeah.
We know each other.
You know. This time it's know each other. And lawyer. Okay. Then Tom still remembers CNC. And how CNC played was my daughter. I still have to go back and play more on the ball of Tom. I always believe that mineral beneficiation can fund transformation.
Yeah.
But that's an issue that you always believe in, but you never think it is further than that. We'll come back to you. I don't know. Ladies and gentlemen, my meeting is adjourned. Our meeting is adjourned. Lunch is across here, and thank you very much for your time.
Yeah,